A growing number of young adults are now routinely doing something their parents would never have dreamed of, moving back home, often into their childhood bedrooms after they graduate from college. Sally Kuslow looks at the reasons that so many 20-somethings are returning to the nest and at how their parents feel about it in her latest book called Slouching Toward Adulthood. It's published by Viking. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
And by the way, later we will be inviting some calls from our listeners, 212-433-9692. I'm sure people will be hearing similar stories to their own as we discuss this. I understand you spent a year talking to young people who've returned home and to their families. And what did you learn? How willing to were they to talk to you about this? Because I could see it as being a bit embarrassing at times.
Leonard, I think because of reality television, people are willing to talk about anything now. And I was surprised at how candid the interview subjects were, as well as their parents. People seemed very eager to unload.
And people didn't mind being the adult child?
About 15% of the people in my book decided to use an anonymous name in the book, and everybody else was happy to share their story because there's less stigma and embarrassment to this than you might imagine.
Well, you even give us a term to describe the young people who haven't settled down, adolescent.
Adolescent, yes. We did a family poll. I was all in favor of adultini because of the cocktails this generation is so fond of, but my older son Jed coined the word adolescent, and I really do like it.
You could have also used emerging adult, because so many of these people don't seem to be anywhere close to becoming true adults.
Yes, the term emerging adult gets bandied about, but some show no sign of emerging. So I felt that we needed a new name.
And you also can call these people wanderers by wandering. Do you mean traveling to places like Asia or Africa, which has become popular, or do you mean wandering in a more philosophical sense, like drifting in their lives?
I mean both, because there is a lot of physical wandering. There was a term used in the Middle Ages, the Wanderjahr, which was the pre-apprentice stage in Germany, and people would really truly wander. And now there's something very much like it, and some of it's psychological, of people just not making up their mind of what they want to do when they grow up. And some of it is physically taking off. A lot of young people start out perhaps teaching English in Japan or taking a gap year in Cambodia, and that year stretches into many years.
And then they come back here, and they have no established job record. And they have no real careers to return to.
Yes, unfortunately, that's the case, because sometimes you might have a wonderful job in, let's say, Vietnam. You might have you might be editing a local journal, and your life is pretty sweet, and it translates to almost nothing when you come back to the United States in terms of your resume.
So it seems that young people today have more choices than their parents and grandparents had at the same age.
I think that they have a veritable friendlies menu of choices, and that's part of the problem, that people get snow blindness because there are so many choices. It makes people quite confused.
How willing were the families you spoke to discuss money?
Not very. It's an indelicate subject. Most people don't like to admit how much fiscal aid they're giving their children, and it's a bit embarrassing because money does represent self-esteem.
But there is a difference from having your child go out into the real world, face some economic difficulties, send them a little bit of money, and having them move back in with you, now paying their phone bill, doing their laundry, providing them with meals when they show up.
Yes, there's a big difference. And of course, some parents change the rules. And when a 27-year-old comes back, they don't treat them the same way that they treated them when they were 17, and they establish boundaries, and the child perhaps pays some rent, or they at least do the laundry or shovel the snow or take care of younger siblings. But the trouble starts when parents don't change the rules and don't even realize that they can change the rules, and then it becomes rather infantilizing for people who are a number of years or even a decade out of college to return to the nest.
My guest is Sally Koslow, who has written a book called Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest. It's published by Viking. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Now, you've published three novels. How did you?
Yes.
How did that lead you to this?
Well, truthfully, I'm going back to my roots. The novels were the aberration because I was a magazine journalist and an editor. I used to be the editor-in-chief of McCall's and a number of other women's magazines. I was listening to your last author talking about the difference between fiction and nonfiction. I feel like it's cross-training, just like you might train to be in a triathlon, that there are different skills required, and I loved writing this book because I became so interested in the subject.
Well, you could also write a novel about kids who return home.
I could.
I'm sure there's a whole culture.
Actually, my next novel does have two young women in it who are rather like the women in this book, but I wanted to find people who would actually allow me to share their first and last names because I didn't want anyone to think I had made these people up.
Now, you cite a Forbes survey that shows that 59% of parents are offering financial support to adult children who are no longer in school. 59%,
it's huge. But kids often need it. They haven't been able to pay off their student loans. That's a tremendous problem in the United States. That's the first thing that the money goes toward, usually.
But I would assume some of that money was being saved for the parents' retirement.
I would assume the same thing, Leonard, and it's unfortunate. Parents are really caught between a rock and a hard place because they would like to be able to save for their retirement, and yet they have needy dependents.
What was your sense? Did most of the parents in the situation tell you they enjoyed having their children living at home, or did they resent the fact that they suddenly had their kids back?
I think for the most part, parents actually enjoy it. Not every parent, but I think many do. I think that there is a sense of friendship between generations that we didn't see in previous generations. But even that can turn out to not be the best thing for the young person because it gets too comfy.
Although it also gives the parents a chance to correct all the mistakes they made when the kid was growing up. Perhaps they didn't. They were busy with their own job.
But I don't think that happens. I think that parents often, when children are younger, are so busy making sure that the kids have great items to put on their applications for college that they are not teaching them how to divide the lights from the darks and how to change the oil in the car and how to get the car serviced. It's pretty difficult to teach these old dogs new tricks. It's not that easy to teach your 28-year-old to do these things.
Were they people who were suffering from empty nest syndrome?
Sometimes I did feel that there were parents, particularly mothers, who wanted one last giant blast of motherhood, that they really weren't ready to give it up. And I think that comes from baby boomers' complete reluctance to ever grow old.
What you was just referring to a little earlier is kind of the darker side for some families. Don't some parents willing to do some parents so willing to do so much for their kids that they deprive them of the opportunity to overcome hardship on their own.
Well,
and the feeling of success and empowerment that overcoming obstacles actually bring.
I agree with you, Leonard. I think there are lots of things in life that you can only learn by doing them yourself. It's really pass-fail. Learning how to get along with people at work, learning how to deal with rejection, how to meet deadlines. No one can do these things for you. And if you always have your parents micromanaging your life, you're not going to learn.
So it's one thing to offer shelter from a storm, another to function as an entire weather system.
Absolutely. Thanks for quoting that, Leonard.
A woman you've called Rebecca, who lives in Ohio, told you that she and her husband are optimistic that the grown son will move out when he gets sick of living with them. But meanwhile, she's doing his laundry. Was she typical of
yes,
any of the parents?
Yes, she was very typical. A warm-hearted mom who really was more than happy to take care of this guy's needs while he was living in the basement. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them out there.
Much of the blame for this phenomenon can be placed on the current economic situation, can't it?
Yes. Well, there is no doubt that people who are under the age of 35 have drawn the short straw and that it every year people graduating from college are competing with the other people who've already graduated from college before them and are underemployed or unemployed. So it's truly a big piece of the picture.
This is really the highest unemployment rate for people in their demographic since
the Great Depression.
Wow.
Because there are a lot of people who don't factor into the numbers that we hear that are usually between 8 and 9%. There are people who've given up looking for a job. So it's probably closer to 15 or 20% for this age group.
And then many of them are working at unpaid internships.
Right. That's the new entry-level job.
Well, but if you do well, you probably will get a job. Is that a bad thing? Meanwhile, you do have to pay the rent.
I think it's a much better thing to have an unpaid internship than to be lolling about eating bonbons. But you often can't afford to have an apartment, or you could have an apartment, but you couldn't pay off your student loans, so you're getting it from all sides.
And student loans are a lot higher today. When I graduated from college, I actually graduated without owing anything because I went to public schools, public institutions, mm-hmm. Brooklyn College and Hunter grad. Today, those schools cost a lot of money, too.
They do. I went to the University of Wisconsin. It was not an extremely expensive school, but it's far higher now, the tuition, than it used to be.
Let's take a call from Jacob from White Plains. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, so I'm a 20-something. I'm 21, calling from my childhood home in White Plains. And I'm wondering a couple things. First off, you know, my parents are both baby boomers, and the generational gap in terms of just attitudes between my parents and my grandparents, their parents, is enormous. And I think that the gap between my parents and me is much less. We can relate on much more subjects. We have similar tastes in books and movies and things. And I wonder if this adolescence, this sort of prolonged period at home for 20-somethings, might be in some part the result of that. Sort of a ending of these sort of generational gaps or culture wars or whatever, and if that's not a bad thing.
Well, I agree with you, Jacob. I think that you've nailed it. That there was a much greater sense of honor and respect, I think, that baby boomers had for their parents and did not want to be like them, and there's much more of a sense, perhaps, that people your age would be happy to turn out like their parents, except that most likely that's not going to happen because it was baby boomers' lives were helped by this giant Wall Street headwind, so that we thought we were smart about managing money because we put money in the bank and it became more money. That is not happening anymore.
Another side of this, a friend who has a child who's returned, she tells me that at social occasions, at parties and the like, her son and people of a similar age who are living with their parents tend to go off to the equivalent of the children's table. In the past, in her generation, she says, once you got past 25 or so, you just mingle with the other adults.
Yeah,
So that's the opposite of what you're saying, Jacob.
Yeah, and that, you know, I'll be the first to admit at my Passover Seder, you know, all the cousins are in their 20s now, and often we do sort of cordon ourselves off into a 20-somethings table rather than, I guess, interacting with our older aunts and uncles. Another thing I was wondering is, like, right now I'm making a turkey chili for my family, and I feel like my parents are helping me develop skills by letting me live at home that at some point, if I can develop a career or have an income, I'd be grateful for it. So it's sort of like a tacit investment in me because I'm trying to make the most of my time while living at home.
And you're learning how to make turkey chili.
I am learning how to, which is not very hard.
Well, I'm glad that you are actually helping out at home because I think a lot of 25-year-olds living at home are sleeping all day and going out with their friends all night, and they are not making chili for their family. So let me come to dinner at your house.
Thank you so much for your call. My guest is Sally Coslow. Her book, Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest. It's published by Viking. We'll continue our conversation. Take more of your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We are back with Sally Coslow, who is the author of three novels and a former editor at McCall's and Lifetime. Her latest book is called Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest. It's published by Viking. You met with a woman named Alexandra Katz, a Barnard College senior who had written a column about the official job market for her university's newspaper. Didn't she tell you that she and her peers are not struggling to remain children, as the popular press has reported, but instead are struggling to overcome the barriers to adulthood that didn't exist for earlier generations? For example, the statistics are that 5.5 million people between 25 and 35 years old are living at home. 40% of them made less than $11,116 a year.
We're talking about poverty.
That's the poverty level.
It is. And unfortunately, there are a lot of young people who try very hard to get a job and can't get a job, or at least a job that pays.
Well, in the past, they would probably move in with five roommates, share a place in not necessarily the fanciest neighborhood, but they can't even afford that anymore?
Well, some can't afford it, and some don't want it. They're so used to having a certain level in their creature comforts that they don't want to live at a place that doesn't have cable television and a fully loaded refrigerator. It's sometimes it's just a lot nicer to live with parents again.
Cindy from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Oh, well, how would you like to have your children who are in their mid-40s come back home with a 11-and-a-half-year-old child and a dog that's not trained and two cats?
I don't think I'd like it, Cindy.
I guess you don't like it either, Cindy.
And if you don't think I'm not going bonkers, I am.
How long ago did this happen?
Oh, about a month ago. My daughter has a full-time job, and she's always worked. She always finds ways to make money. But my son-in-law has dreams of being a billionaire. So he has started two business – he's worked at Bear Stearns, and then he left and – tried a hedge fund, which didn't work, and then he made a prototype for I can't think of where they are. The people who deal in stocks.
Brokers.
Yeah, the brokers. I mean, they would use this machinery, and it would be very cheap. So it was a very good idea, and he started it, but he didn't have deep enough pockets. So he was unable to hold on to it. Somebody else got it, and he didn't get money. They just took it over. There was no money. And for a year, I didn't know this, they were living on credit cards and ran up $100,000 worth of credit card debt. Plus the IRR, they got a bad business with the IRA.
Yes.
It goes on and on. He's starting the third business now, and he's raised $4 million.
Well, Cindy, if I can jump in here.
She is the last resort for these people.
You're the last resort, and you're being a wonderful parent, and people like you are in a really, really tough position. Sometimes another parent in the same spot might create a deadline, say, you can stay here for 6 months, but after that, you have to go work at McDonald's. You have to do something. But it's a very, very tough spot to be in.
We feel sorry for you. We go now to Bill in Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just speaking with someone about this the other day, which would be my two kids who are 18 and 19. When I grew up in New Jersey, it was kind of an unsaid rule that you made your own way after 17, 18 years old. Now that I have an 18 and 19-year-old, I'm against the norm, because when I moved to Long Island in my mid-20s, it was very popular and very accepted that people stayed home until their late 20s or early 30s so that they could afford, you know, a house. A lot of people got married and still stayed home with their parents or their in-laws. So I'm kind of going against the grain here, trying to teach my children to be very independent and be very resourceful. And I've done all the, you know, helping them get jobs and internships, and I expect a lot from them. But compared to their peers, it seems as though I'm strange.
Well, I think you deserve a lot of credit for helping them learn to help themselves, which it sounds like you're doing.
We have somebody wrote in, Emily Manhattan, along these lines. She said, I'm 25, and I find it ridiculous that nearly 60% of parents are contributing to their 20-something children living at home. I lived at home after finishing graduate school and managed to pay all my expenses, including my student loans and health insurance, and save some money while making a typical entry-level salary. I finally moved to Manhattan a few weeks ago after living at home for 5 months, and it's wonderful, albeit I need to pinch pennies a little more. Just because you don't have to pay rent by living at home with your parents doesn't mean you should be deprived of gaining financial independence.
Well, good for her.
So we thank you for your call, Bill.
Thank you very much.
What's happening now? Are you has the situation resolved itself?
No. I'm kind of taking a preemptive strike because my children are they just graduated from their freshman year, and I don't want to find them really without the resources and the integrity to make their own way in a few years.
I think that's commendable.
Thanks for your call. One of the women you write about in your book, you've called her Portia, told you that a master's is a new bachelor's degree. So people have to keep on going for graduate degrees in order to just make their way in the world?
Sometimes people go to grad school because they think if they spend another 2 years in school, the job market's going to be better when they've gotten the master's degree. And some master's degrees can be a very helpful degree to have, let's say a social work degree, an MSW. Or I have a niece who's just gotten a degree in urban planning, and she has already gotten a job because that's an area where there are growth opportunities. But to get a master's degree in art history or in English, you may not be no more qualified after you have the master's than you were when you had your BA.
Is it hard for some parents to understand their children who return home because the children's situation is so different from what theirs was at the same age?
Yes, I think it is. But I also think that one of the reasons that we haven't talked about that we're seeing so much of this is that parents really want their children to have many of the things they didn't have, and that there is a certain amount of spoiling. I mean, some might say that children go through college on a real cloud of narcissism because their parents are grooming them. They see each child as a perfect snowflake, and while the parents might have worked every summer at a dull job in a bank, let's say, their children are off at an elephant camp in Cambodia because it sounds really great.
Well, did some of the young adults you met have unrealistic expectations about the sorts of jobs they could expect to get right out of college?
Well, yes, but most of them weren't thinking about what the jobs were that they were going to get, that they decided on a major in, say, the history of fashion, and they never considered if there would be job opportunities when they got the degree.
On the other hand, there were maybe 10 years ago, many people went and got business degrees and just assumed that they would be starting at six figures at some company.
And many did, but that was 10 years ago, and we're in quite a different world now.
Melissa from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to point out that I think there's, you know, different perspectives on this, and I think they all hold some truth. But there is the perspective that, you know, real estate and buying a home is much more difficult and challenging at this current time than it was when, you know, my parents and my friends' parents in the 70s, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, buying a home, buying any kind of land was much more accessible. And so now it is more of a challenge to do that. And you might have the perspective that you have a lot of room, you have a lot of space in these different homes that are not being used. You have parents that have maybe five bedrooms that now it's, you know, they're only utilizing two or three rooms in the entire house. And in order to sort of save money and to consolidate, it's easier when you move in with your family at certain times to save money in order to buy your own home or to, you know, do that type of thing.
Well, I think it's great if someone actually has a plan when they move in with their parents and they are saving money, that they're systematically putting away money toward buying a house. The fact of the matter is that interest rates were enormously high in, let's say, the mid-1970s when your parents or other baby boomer parents were buying a house. The interest rates are very, very low now. It's just that banks aren't so eager to make loans. And it is harder to afford to buy a new home because many people also owe tremendous amounts for their student debt.
Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question as far as cultural differences with this trend. I'm a little wary that the discussion is very centered kind of in a white Anglo-centric point of view, considering that many other cultures, the multi-generational families all live together. And I'm kind of in the opposite side of most of the callers so far in that my wife and I are mid to late 20s. We live separately from our parents, but I'm a little bit sad about it sometimes because I feel like we just kind of left them to kind of, live their life by themselves, and we're separate, and we don't necessarily have the deeper relationships that maybe some other families from other cultures do.
It is entirely possible that the pendulum will swing in the direction that you're pointing out, and that families will live together longer like they once did before the 1950s and 60s. And that in other countries, in Italy, for example, it's completely the norm for people to live in the family home throughout the 20s and maybe well into the 30s until marriage.
You've described, you've observed in this book that your contemporaries who grew up during the baby boom generation are shocked when they hear that a young person who has a good job has quit it before finding another job. Did you learn anything that can help people understand the thinking behind that choice?
Well, I don't think you're ever going to change the attitudes, Leonard, of baby boomers in terms of their level of being shocked that anyone would do this. But I do know young people who I interviewed for the book and some who I know who I didn't include in the book who felt that they had very valid reasons for quitting a job. They didn't like the hours. They didn't like the atmosphere. They didn't feel that they were growing. They felt it would be easier to get a job if they had more time to look for one. And this is not an attitude expressed by very many baby boomers. I've had several jobs.
If you quit a job, it was because you had already found a job
right,
that you preferred.
It's, see her stay. That's always been my attitude.
Well, you cite studies by social scientists who found that a greater percentage of young people today believe themselves to be important or likable than in the past. Perhaps that goes along with this.
Yes, I always say that I was raised before self-esteem had been invented. I didn't ever imagine that I could quit a job.
Now, a caller from Queens asked why our tone is so condemning. I didn't think we were, but this listener hears it. For some people, immigrants, et cetera, it's helpful to consolidate resources by having a multi-generational home.
I agree. I mean, I recently became a grandmother, and I had a fantasy that my son and daughter-in-law and the baby would come and live with me for the summer, but they basically said, no, thank you.
Another caller, Elise, is a 28-year-old living with her parents, and she's really enjoyed getting to know her parents again from a different perspective.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I don't think that there's anything wrong with family spending time or for young people to live at home. I want to make that clear, but I do think that the expectation should be clarified, and that if a young person is living at home when they're in their 20s or 30s, they should take on much more responsibility than when they were 12 or 13 or 14 years old.
What is your general sense? Is this going to be a trend for the future, or is this just something that's happening now because of this economic downturn?
I do think if our economy goes on an uplift that we'll see less of it, but that it's probably not going to happen so fast, so that we will see more of this, but that parents do to a certain extent have to learn to butt out and to realize that their children need growth experiences that they can only teach themselves.
Sally Koslow will be reading and signing books next Thursday at 7 at the Upper East Side Barnes & Noble store. That's at 86th Street between Lexington Avenue and 3rd. Her book, Slouching Toward Adulthood, Observations from the Not-So-Empty Nest, is published by Viking. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show. And by the way, we've gotten lots of calls and lots of comments that we couldn't get to. This is a topic that I think a lot of people are fascinated by.
Well, fascinated me. Thank you, Leonard.